Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Used to be that every school or town had one or multiple athletes who excelled at two, three, or four sports. For boys, it was usually football, basketball, and baseball, and girls, field hockey, basketball, and softball. Today, there aren't as many athletes that play more than one sport because they've chosen to play the sport they're best at, and they play it or train for it all year round. And the sports they play are just as likely to be soccer or lacrosse as the other sports. Specialization has led to injuries that trainers or doctors probably didn't see years ago. Specialization in sports by kids is the topic of our conversation today. Joining us is Dr. Michael Cordes with UPMC Pinnacle, chairman of the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee of the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association. Dr. Cordes, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Also joining us is Dr. Matthew Silvis, Division Chief of Primary Care Sports Medicine at Penn State Health and author of a forthcoming paper on overuse injuries. Dr. Silvis, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us, a name you may recognize, Coach Charlie Fortney, Program Director with Advanced Hoops AAU Basketball. Charlie Fortney, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
If you have a question or comment, and we'd like to hear your experiences as well as we're talking about specialization in sports and the injuries that that have come about in the last 20 years as kids have specialized more often, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, let's talk about the landscape for today's young athletes. It is much different than what I just described in that introduction. Charlie Fortney, what's it look like for young people today playing sports?
Well, and I think it starts at the highest level. The athletes at every level, even soccer now, are making millions of dollars doing a sport because they got that good at that sport. So I think it's a trickle-down effect where parents, even kids, are starting to calculate that if I get really good at something, it has a high payoff value. Where, you know, my dad's 79 this year. He had a chance to play for the Steelers back in his day, and he looked at my mom and said, "Well, they're not going to pay me near as much as I make in my regular job. I can't do it." Well, that's not the era we live in, and I know right. Dr. Cordes probably has some things to say about that too. But basically, today it's a different era. So I think we see more kids feeling that pressure coming from all different angles to specialize.
But is it that they're looking at the end game even when they're young, that, this could end up in a college scholarship, or maybe I could even go pro if I work hard, train hard all year round?
I think what's happening, and I'm not going to be negative toward parents, but I think the culture itself, which has parents in it, we're basically guiding kids into specialization without giving them an open opportunity to play other sports. And I've seen it firsthand. But ultimately, if a young man or a young lady, and I have a daughter in my own house that will not play anything but basketball, and she doesn't even really super dedicate herself to basketball, but that's all she wants to do. And I'm good with that because I've encouraged her to do other things, and that's just not what she wants to do. But there's a lot of kids out there that I think would want to try some baseball or just go out for rec basketball or just balance their life out a little bit. And I just feel like they feel the same pull, that pull from not only their other families around them, and the culture we're in is, look, don't just do things for fun. We either do it serious or that's it. Wow. And I think that's guiding it.
Yeah. Dr. Cordes, you've seen this up close with the PIAA. What's changed over the years?
Well, I think what Charlie's saying is exactly what's changed. I mean, I get kids come in the office that are injured, and the parent will say to me, this is a maybe 9 or 10-year-old kid, you got to really do something quick because he's got a game tomorrow and he can't miss this game. It's very important because, you know, you're looking at a future all-star and a future all-American. And I'm looking at this little kid that's got a smile on his face and I'm thinking, Pop, let him go. He wants to have fun. And, you know, they did some evaluation several years ago where they got people together and they said, you know, what should sports teach people? And they asked parents, and they asked teachers, they asked coaches, and it teaches them to work together. It teaches them how to play together. It teaches them rules and regulations. It teaches them respect. And finally, one kid says, you know, it teaches me to have fun. And I think that's what we're missing today. Specialization is all over the country today. I mean, I'm a family doc. Matt's a family doc, but we specialize in sports medicine. Family doctors, they specialize in geriatrics. They specialize in all kinds of things. So when kids look around, what else are they going to do? I mean, they're going to emulate what they see. So specialization is here. It's here to stay. I don't know how we're going to change it at this point in time unless we change entire modes of thought.
Right.
And it's going to be very, very difficult to try to do that. And as Charlie said, boy, there's a lot of money to be made in sports today. I was at Penn State for 5 years, and I learned something at Penn State. Football's not a game.
It is a business.
It is a big business.
Mm. Dr. Silvis, same thing. Your observations from dealing in sports medicine. It's changed.
So I agree with a lot of what's already been said. I guess I would like to just kind of offer a definition. So I think the debate is around early sports specialization, which is really defined under 12 years of age. It's natural for a student athlete to want to specialize in their preferred sport the older they get. My concern is that under 12 category, where kids and their parents, coaches, communities are making decisions, that a child at age 5 or 6 or 7 focuses exclusively on one sport at the exception of all others. And I think that's what led me towards my research question, just with my observations in professional hockey. But I think that's really the debate right now. There are certain sports where you really do need to specialize early, less than 12 years of age. Gymnastics, ballet, figure skating. Some people argue swimming and diving. So there are some carve-out sports that do require early sports specialization based on a certain body type at a young age.
But you see, the sports that you just listed, yes, they, for the most part, they're individual sports. Mm-hmm. Yes, they compete in a team atmosphere, but a lot of those sports are individual sports. Most high schools don't have gymnastics teams, don't have figure skating teams. So, you know, we've heard of Olympic athletes that have trained from the time they were 5 years old, that they had to travel, their parents had to spend lots of money for them to get specialized training. But when we're talking about the sports that you can play in high school, why should a high school kid have to specialize?
Well, I'll make one more comment here before I'll let the others chime in. But there's a real value to early sports diversification. So if you take a kid who wants to play high school soccer, there's benefit in picking up basketball skills along the way. It may actually allow you to jump and land better and hit a soccer ball. Better, be more competitive for ball contact. And so there's a lot of arguments now coming out that even from a performance perspective, you actually benefit from having sports diversification. Skills transfer across sports. It may actually develop better muscle memory, better muscle adaptability to different types of playing environments. And that's where we're hearing a lot of professional athletes that have found their successes in team-based sports like basketball, Olympic soccer, professional ice hockey, football, discussing how other sports in their development actually help them succeed in their ultimate successful sport and career.
I'm going to drop a few sound clips in here from some reports and some podcasts that we've heard. John Kruk is former Major League All-Star baseball player, mostly with the Philadelphia Phillies. He's now a color analyst on the Phillies TV broadcast. Greg Murphy is the sideline reporter for the Phillies. Kruk has a weekly podcast, and they recently discussed travel teams, and this is something that has popped up in the last 20 years, that athletes who played in high school or play in high school but want to be seen more often by scouts, college scouts, maybe even pro scouts, they get on elite travel teams, baseball, basketball, soccer. There are a lot of them out there, but there's a conversation from the Kruk cast. Just listen to what they have to say about that.
When these kids are playing every single weekend and they're practicing 2 or 3 days a week also, and every tournament, it's win, 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 win. When do they get to enjoy it?
They don't. So often they do not.
But here's another thing that bothers me about travel ball, and I've heard travel ball coaches say this. If they don't do well the first day and they're not in the best bracket or whatever, You know, they'll say, ah, we'll get them next weekend. Well, what's that telling the kid? It's okay. We're not going to win, so...
To just take the weekend off.
Who gives a crap?
Well, let me back you up, because I hear what you're saying, that there are instances of travel ball that are good. And I agree with you. When a you know, a kid, whether it be a young man or a young woman, gets to that high school level and they're starting to eye college and wanting to play in college, then I can understand getting the best players together and traveling and going to play. But, and I'm as guilty as anybody, because my two sons both played travel baseball. But they were playing travel baseball when they were nine.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And you start to realize as a parent that, you know, you're putting these kids in, they're playing five games a week, and they're playing four games on the weekend, and family vacations are getting canceled, and you know, all you're doing is going around and playing baseball.
They're not
for
kids
these nine
anymore.
Exactly. So that's the problem I have come to see with travel sports.
And this is just kind of backs up exactly what you were saying. What you take away from that is the nine-year-olds. Greg Murphy mentioned his two sons, nine-year-olds, that fun is way down on the list. But a nine-year-old playing five games a week and practicing on top of that, boy, that sounds like an awful lot.
That's work.
That is.
That's no longer a game. It's no longer fun. It's no longer play. It is work. And kids should not be working like that.
Dr. Silva, something else that they mentioned, that podcast, I don't know was on that particular clip, but they mentioned burnout. Yeah. Is that part of the study that you're doing, you're writing about, is burnout part of, okay, we're going to be talking about injuries that are coming about as a result of all this play, but burnout would seem to be even a greater potential.
So burnout wasn't specifically part of the work that I did, but is a major risk. What you see along the way is when kids aren't having fun, when it's not kid-driven in their choice of their activities and they don't have balance, if they get burned out, they just stop participating in sports. And what's even worse is they may not exercise at all. So we have a major problem with childhood obesity in the United States. So we're talking about a very small segment of kids right now on this radio show who are specializing and participating in sports through high school. The majority of kids have dropped out along the way. They've been discouraged. They don't even exercise at that point. So burnout has major ripple effects. If that child burns out of their sport and now they don't exercise into adulthood, what kind of medical conditions or concerns are they going to have over the long haul through their adult lives?
Charlie, I'm curious. When you were growing up in Steelton, how often during the summer were you playing pickup games, after school playing pickup games?
Well, that was a common thing. I often say to people and parents now that sign their kid up for my program, I say to them, you know, if when I was a kid, what you see me doing and what you're paying for is what happened at the basketball court down the street on a regular basis. You wouldn't have to pay for it. So I'm basically reorganizing, and maybe a little more of a structured way, what I experienced as a kid, because today the kids are inside. They're on their PlayStations. I know I'm off about 10 years on what I just said. It's probably a new name now. I know it was Atari when I was a kid or whatever, but even my own son, I got to say, you're only allowed an hour a day on your Fortnite or whatever they call it, you know? And so
already using terms that I don't recognize.
Yeah, and I hope I'm probably butchering these right now. But anyway, no, when I was a kid, the atmosphere was that you could go to the field and play a full field game of touch football. You could play baseball at the field and get 10 guys to play home run derby. We're not in that era right now. We're definitely not in that era. And I miss that. I miss that for my own son. I miss that for the kids around. But at least the consolation I have is that I can organize that in my program and see 15 to 20 kids in the gym and have really quality role models around these kids to say, okay, now let's pick teams. Now let's work on this, and I can make sure it has some value. But to be honest with you, I wish parents wouldn't have to pay for it. You know,
in Steelton, you only played touch football. I mean, coach, all we were tackling each other.
There's a lot of tackling going on there in Steelton.
There's a little differentiation of the terminology touch in Steelton.
Touch, get shoved in the back.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But the point, the reason I asked that question is because just yesterday we were talking about the amount of time that kids spend on their screens, on their computer screens, mobile phones, video games, all those things. But in those pickup games. You know, in the summer, it was morning to night that we were playing games. The seasons, we were playing football, we were playing basketball, we were playing baseball in the summer.
And maybe
street hockey.
Maybe even three different games a day
and
three different sports.
But we had to use our imaginations. All right, how many players do we have? Okay, if we don't have enough players, what's foul, what's fair? Home run derby, you know, two guys could play the game. You don't see that. And the point I'm getting to is that everything is so structured.
Yes.
There are so many kids who wouldn't play a sport unless they got a uniform, unless they had a practice. And those are one of the things, that's one of the things that's really changed.
But you see, things have to be structured today in some ways too. PIAA last year or the year before initiated a time of acclimatization to get ready for football. Why is that? Well, because kids, as Charlie said, they're inside today. They're watching TV. They're in air conditioning. They want to go somewhere. We used to get on our bikes and go. Not today. They have mommy or daddy drive them someplace. So they're really not exercising. So in order to try to make sure that we don't have these heat problems that we just had down in Maryland not too long ago. Try not to have those kind of problems. We make these kids acclimatize. So they've got like 5 to 7 days of acclimatization before they can go out for football, for example. And we just tried that in football. We didn't do it in any others yet, but that's possibly coming.
Actually, that's probably a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably a good thing for the health of players. But still, the point is that you're right. I mean, especially with basketball, some of the other sports that unless, you know, the first time I got to shoot a basketball at a fiberglass backboard, I thought I was playing NBA basketball, you know, because, you know, the courts we had to play on, you didn't have fiberglass. Now every driveway has a fiberglass backboard that you can see through. But, you know, that's one of the ways and things when you were talking about big money. It's just another way.
Yeah. Well, we had peach baskets. So
yeah, sure you did. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about if I could say the word, it would be a better show. Specialization of sports amongst young people today. And we're eventually going to be talking about some of the injuries that we're seeing as a result of that specialization of training and playing all year round. Our guest today, Coach Charlie Fortney, Program Director with Advanced Hoops AAU Basketball, Dr. Matthew Silvis, Division Chief of Primary Care Sports Medicine at Penn State Health, and he's authoring a forthcoming paper on overuse injuries. Dr. Michael Cordes, UPMC Pinnacle, Chairman of the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee of the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association. If you have a question or comment, maybe a story to tell, 1-800-729-7532. Do you have a child who plays a sport and specializes in one sport? Maybe you have a child who plays multiple sports. I'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We kind of touched on this, but Dr. Matthew Silvis from Penn State Health wanted to kind of highlight a little bit more before we get into a discussion of the injuries that we're seeing that are relatively new. And that is, I've seen it myself. I've actually thought it myself. Some played college baseball, and he played Division III. But it was, as you're growing up, you heard so many parents say, and even the kids would say, "Well, I want to get a college scholarship," or a parent say, "Yeah, he's on his way to a scholarship here." That's not for everyone, but it seems to be on the minds of a lot of athletes.
Well, I think college is really expensive. I have a senior at Hershey High School this year. We're on the college search right now, and $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 between tuition and cost of living for each individual year for college is actually kind of the norm in a lot of places. So I think money's on everybody's mind. I think an important thing for parents to understand, though, is that academic scholarships are way more prevalent for college and athletic scholarships. So if you look at high school starting varsity athletes, 2% of those athletes will get an athletic scholarship for college. And I think that that's an important number for people to have in their heads. It's not to discourage kids from striving for an athletic scholarship for college. It's a wonderful thing. But it shouldn't be not to think of or at least discount the role that academic scholarships can have, because most kids are going to make their careers using their minds and not necessarily their athletic prowess. And so I joke with parents in clinic oftentimes with parents that it's not really a joke. I think they think I'm joking, but I'm not really joking, that if they want to get their kid a scholarship for college, they should be sending them to math camp in the summer or science camp, that's where the money's at actually when you look at collegiate scholarships.
And just to reiterate what you just said, 2% of varsity athletes.
Varsity starting athletes.
2%.
2%.
That is a surprising statistic, Charlie. What do
you think? Yeah, and to further understand what Dr. Silva is saying is that athletic scholarships will apply to anyone that becomes a Division I athlete or a Division II athlete, that they have permission by the NCAA, so long as the program's fully funded, to give out athletic aid. Academic aid can happen at the D1, D2, or D3 level. D3s are only allowed to give academic aid. So parents that I advise, I advise parents to see Division III as the most advantageous way for their kid to play sports in college and get financial aid. And here's how it works. Basically, if you have an athlete that you're spending a lot of money on travel sports and they become a shoe-in type of player for the D3 level, then basically it's better to be a bigger fish in a Division III athletic pond where the coach at a Division III school says, man, if I can just get this kid that could play D2, could play maybe D1 somewhere and get athletic aid. If that kid has, I would say at this point it's pretty competitive, a 3-2 to 3-3 or higher. In many cases, still 3-0 fits the ballpark. And their SATs are 1,000 or higher. It'd be really nice to be over 1,200. Then that coach at that school can take that transcript into the academic office, and I help kids with this every year, 30, 40 a year, can walk into an office and say, hey, I have a kid that I want on my baseball team, or I want this girl on my field hockey team, and she fits what you ask me to bring to you. Because the academic department looks at the coach and says, don't even show up unless you have a 3-3 or an 11 or whatever their standard is. And when they do, that kid often gets put closer to the front of the line and getting academic aid, and sometimes it becomes 20,000 off. I have one girl that got 30 grand off of a school that cost 55 to go play, I believe it was a field hockey at the one school, and so now it's down to 25 right away, and that had nothing to do with athletic aid, but they wanted her for athletic purposes, but they got her the academic aid because her transcript fit. So I agree with Matt here, is that sign up for tutoring. Sign up. My daughter, she's a college swimmer now. We spent more money on Sylvan Learning Center and places like that to improve her deficiencies in academics, because at the end of the day, I knew she was good enough for a certain level, but the academics, I was a little worried. And she got what she needed, and it helped her financial aid.
What you're describing is a responsible way to look at it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of athletes who look at it as if the only reason I need to get a good grade is to be able to stay eligible to play. That, you know, I'm good enough that no matter what my grades are, I'm going to get a scholarship somewhere. Now, we know there are players like that. There are elite players like that, and there are universities that may even bend the rules to let them in. But for the most part, again, and this goes back to Dr. Silvis, what you were saying earlier, is that, you know, don't just strive for grades that are going to keep you eligible. The two of you just described why it's important to be better academically than athletically.
Absolutely.
And then if you're looking at the end result, there's a lot of them out there that think, well, I'm going to be playing on Sunday.
Right.
And
right.
These kids are even going to be more disappointed. And, you know, I tell them flat out, the ones that I've seen at Penn State, et cetera, you know, you're going to be a professional someday. The chances of being a professional football player are a lot less. So strive for what you use with your head, and I mean by learning. Don't strive for what you do with your head, and I mean hitting. That doesn't work.
All right, so let's talk about the injury before we get to some phone calls and emails here. We set up the program. One of the goals of the program today is to talk about some injuries that you've seen as a result of specializing in sports. Dr. Cordell, let's start with you. As part of PIAA and over the years, what you've seen. Are there injuries today, and what are they, that you're seeing now that you didn't maybe 20 years ago or see as many of? Because there are people, the young people who are specializing in one sport.
A lot of overutilization types of injuries, leg injuries, stuff like this. If you get somebody that's playing several sports, they're using all the muscles in their legs. You get somebody that just plays specific sports, they're not using all the muscles of their legs, and they overtax some of the muscles. So you get a lot of stress fractures, you get a lot of muscle pulls, strains, contusions, etc. ACLs is another thing. I mean, you bounce around in your knees so much, and especially if you're playing football, you're doing a cutting sport, the chances of an ACL always increase, and always put more potential ACLs. Seeing a lot of ACLs today, which we did not see in the past. Shoulders, a lot of shoulders, especially in baseball. I mean, you get a lot of kids out there now that it's no wonder a lot of kids just go from high school into the professionals in baseball. Because if you're a pitcher, you're going to throw your shoulder out well into the end of your high school career, to let alone get into college. Then you won't have a shoulder left after that. So if you're looking, you know, to really try to get a lifelong experience and not ruin yourself on the way up, you should be diversified. I think to go into one sport and just do that one sport, it's a problem. Even concussions. I mean, if you're going to be hitting and hitting improperly, which most kids do, I think they try to train them. I think our officials, the PIAA officials, are starting to call more along the lines of an intentional hit on somebody with a helmet, the head. I still don't see a lot of them. I see a lot more calls on holding, and I don't know if anybody ever got hurt when holding, but I do know a lot of people that have been using their head for contact that end up with a neck fracture or a concussion or destroy the other guy or all the above. So, I mean, you got to give your body a chance to rest. And that's why even if you just play soccer all year, you still need rest periods between those soccer events.
I think we had you on the program before where we talked about the statistics show that there are more concussions in girls' soccer than even football because of heading the ball, running into other players. Dr. Silvis, you're writing a paper on this. You're in the midst of research now. Without giving too much away of what your paper's going to say, what have you found?
Yeah, so our paper's been accepted. It's going to be published shortly. And what I did was we did a study looking at the Washington Capitals organization, Penn State Division One ice hockey, and Lebanon Valley College Division Three ice hockey, and it was a survey-based study. And we had a very simple question, and that was, you know, parents aspire to see their kids be successful at the next level, which we've talked about this morning. How many professional or collegiate ice hockey players specialized under the age of 12? And we found across the Capitals organization, Penn State, and Lebanon Valley College, the average age of specialization was 14 and a half. Anecdotally, I see a far younger specialized ice hockey player in our community in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I think that this hopefully is a good conversation piece to start with organizations, parents, coaches, to start the conversation about allowing kids to play other sports growing up. To tie into what Dr. Cordes was just saying, one of the injury histories that we saw more prevalent amongst ice hockey players that specialized early, meaning under age 12, was concussion. And it was really exposure-based. So the more you're exposed to hits, the more likely you are going to get a concussion. So having kids diversify into sports that don't carry the same injury risk as their favored sport can be really helpful. So having an ice hockey player, for instance, enjoy the sport of tennis, totally different type of sport, not going to put you at risk for concussion, but the movement patterns on a tennis court you could imagine could translate over to ice hockey play. That's how we kind of want to, we can think about sport choice in kids as they're growing. Of course, kids have to have an interest in the activity, but a lot of kids want to try everything when they're young. And this is a nice way to start thinking about allowing them to try a variety of different sports, think out of the box in terms of what they can do, and may change their injury risk.
Something you said earlier, and I think what we really are talking about is those youngest kids who are choosing to specialize. Last year, NPR did a report on just what we're talking about, is specialization and the injuries. And this is just a clip from that report. It was NPR's Allison Aubrey, and she was talking with, the person she was speaking with was Timothy McGuine, who is a sports medicine specialist at the University of Wisconsin, about general rules for practice time. And Wisconsin actually did a study kind of similar to yours, but this was just with University of Wisconsin athletes.
McGuine says to reduce the risk of injury, a general rule of thumb is this. Each week, the number of hours a kid trains and competes should not exceed their age.
So a 10-year-old should not play or practice more than 10 hours a week.
And for kids in high school, there's evidence that training more than 16 hours a week can increase the risk of injury.
You agree with that?
It immediately sounds practical, and it sounds about right. I mean, depending on what sport it is, 10 hours a week on the football field for a 10-year-old could be a little too much, you know? But I think if we're talking about most other sports where you aren't running into collision and all that, you know, it just immediately rang a bell to me that was decent advice, you know? But naturally, I would defer to the doctors here.
Docs.
You know, I think we're trying to put limitations on things, and we need more information than just saying, well, 10 hours a week is all you can do. It depends on the sport. Depends on the individual. It depends on, you know, how well they are geared into that sport. Are they new to the sport? Are they old to the sport? There's a whole lot of variables there that I haven't heard.
Yeah, I coached my son T-ball all the way up through American Legion. I remember one 5-year-old. In batting practice, who was looking at the birds in the trees and line drive off the side of his head.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing that he was more interested in what was going on over there than what he was with the baseball.
So. I like what Matt said a little bit earlier, and just a personal note on that. You know, I played football for a long time, and I had a bad knee for a long time, but I tore my ACL playing tennis.
Very nice.
Matt, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that was a great study that they did in Wisconsin. If you look at their data, when they talk about that 16 hours a week for the high school athlete, it wasn't just a small increase in injury risk. You start to see an exponential rise. And that's what really should get everybody's attention. It wasn't like you were just adding a little bit or marginal risk when you went over that threshold. You really start to see a steep incline in the risk of overuse injury. And this is where the rub is. So coaches and parents and athletes want to be available during the entire season. They want to be able to play their sport that they enjoy. If you practice and play too much, you can actually be taken out of your sport. And that's what Mike and I do for a living. We see kids that are hurt. We have to pull them out of their sport for them to recover. And then we hope we get them back in for that season. If you can somehow avoid that child athlete, that adolescent, from getting hurt in the first place, and if exposure is one of those risks, if we can modify their exposure, that would be a really good thing, because that keeps kids in the game. It keeps them engaged. It keeps them playing. And our goal in sports medicine is we want kids to love to play sports. We want them to be out there playing and not be hurt. It actually is not good for our business, but it's really good for the athletes. And I think that's a nice message to give to parents and coaches and athletes.
Agreed 100%. The big thing, I think the easiest way to treat an injury is not to have it.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about youth sports, young people who are specializing in sports, some of the injuries, some of the things that have happened to their bodies as a result of specializing in sport. We'd like to hear your comments. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Our guest today, Dr. Matthew Silvis, who is a Division Chief of Primary Care Sports Medicine at Penn State Health and author of a forthcoming paper on overuse injuries. Dr. Michael Cordes, UPMC Pinnacle, Chairman of the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee of the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association, and Coach Charlie Fortney, Program Director of Advanced Hoops AAU Basketball. Again, 1-800-729-7532. We have several emails. Donna says, we had a young man from Lower Dauphin get a scholarship to to the University of Pennsylvania for football. The coach was happy to have our student complete his high school volleyball career due to the cross-training benefits. Kind of goes back to what you were saying, that the coaches appreciated what the athletes were doing playing other sports. Paul from Waynesboro says, as a former marathon runner, I'm familiar with training. My daughter attended high school in Waynesboro. She was a good runner, but became injured by being pushed too hard. The coach pushed the kids to run and compete when injured and in pain. We need better coaching. The injuries stay with the kids long after high school. All right, we know that there are a lot of coaches, over the years especially, it's not just coaches, that there is pressure to play. The two doctors said that your job is, very often you have to tell an athlete that they can't play because of this injury, but we know that pressure exists. There has to be, I don't know, Charlie, you tell me, has there been a change in mindset of coaches? I mean, if you ask a coach face-to-face, would you play an injured player? They would say, oh, no, don't want to jeopardize the future. Some mean that. Others have kind of crossed the line.
Yeah, I think coaches struggle with old-school, new-school mentality. So, in other words, growing up, it was perfectly okay for a coach to say to a kid, because they felt like it was the best thing for the kid to tell him, hey, buddy, toughen up, just get in there and suck it up, you know? And the whole suck it up, toughen up element is there's liability to that today that there wasn't 20 years ago. And I know this isn't apples to apples, but Aaron Rodgers is quoted as having to explain himself why he made a comment after practice yesterday that people weren't bringing their A game, and they're professionals. They basically need to bring their A game. And it was in so many words he said that, and he just said, listen, I want to win. I want excellence. And I, as a leader of this team, I have to expect that. So coaches kind of are in that mindset too. So coaches need educated today. And I think most of them want that, but they're still struggling with the way I grew up or the way they grew up.
And we've talked a lot about the way we grew up.
In fairness to coaches, they're volunteers that are often thrown in situations where they're not educated to deal with the job in such a way where they can do it safely without getting their volunteerism thrown back in their face. They need guidance. And the youth sports out there, even the travel sports, is very unregulated and pretty much driven by the leadership. And hopefully it's good.
PIAA, how do you monitor, how do you provide guidelines, policy for coaches and injuries?
We implement our policies carefully and slowly. I mean, you get a coach that's been in coaching for a long, long time. They have their own ways of doing things. And what we have to do is we have to show them that perhaps their way isn't the only way to begin with, and then show them that there are better ways. You know, I had the opportunity to work with probably one of the best coaches around. That was Coach Paterno. So I worked with him for 5 years. And when I got up there, we had our moments. I mean, no question about that. But once I showed
him... All right, when you say you had your moments, wanted to play a player.
He had his idea of what was right, and I had my idea of what was right. And finally, after discussion, we came to a very basic conclusion. He coaches, I take care. So, I mean, the injuries that were sustained, if we could show him that may not have occurred if something else had been done, he was in it. I mean, I had very little problems. After my first 6 months with Coach Paterno, I had very little problems with him. And, you know, I try to bring that same kind of philosophy down with PIAA. You know, there are times when you have a coach that's been in wrestling for 150 years, and he does it this way. And, you know, he doesn't allow his kids to drink water. He gets some salt tablets, all this kind of nonsensical stuff. You have to show them that that's not the way to do it. And not just tell them don't do it, tell them why. Coaches are very inquisitive, they're knowledgeable, and they do want to continue their knowledge and especially increase their knowledge bank content if they know that what they're going to do is going to help their athletes and not only make them stronger but give them a better winning record. Mm-hmm. If you can show them that, then they agree with it. So we tried the whole night, the routine with, you know, thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do that with PIAA. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Silvis, just what Charlie said, though, about... You know, he mentioned Aaron Rodgers, all-pro quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. The difference is that's pro football. They're being paid. They're professionals. Mm-hmm. Now, not saying that it's right to say you play through pain, you play with an injury that could stay with you for the rest of your life. But when we're talking about amateur sports, kids 14, 15, 15 or 16 years old, they cannot have that same attitude that I'm going to play through the pain or I'm going to play through this injury, show how tough I am.
Yeah, so I want to reflect back. Just Charlie mentioned just coaches today, many of the coaches that we interface with are volunteers. And one of the most impactful people in my life was my junior high cross country coach. And I went on to run in college at the Division III level and still run today. And he, if I think about who impacted my life the greatest along the way, oftentimes many of us will actually say and name a coach on that short list of individuals.
Teachers, coaches.
They're very impactful, yeah. Right? And so we have a lot. We should be very thankful to have people that are willing to volunteer their time for that service. I think the challenge is medicine's constantly changing. What we're talking about today won't be what we'll be talking about in 5 years. And I think concussion's a great example of that. Mm-hmm. The way we handled concussion a decade ago, 5 years ago, it's constantly changing. And that's the challenge, I think, for coaches today. If they're not getting regular doses of education on the medical side, is that it's impossible to keep up with for a layperson. And so we need to have conversations on a consistent basis. One, so that we understand their demands as a coach and the demand of the sport that we've been asked to help care for the athletes are participating in. I have to understand something about ice hockey to be the Hershey Bears team physician, even though I'm not an ice hockey player. And they have to also understand some of the medicine that we're providing and how that's changing over time. So, because they want what's in the best interest of the athlete. They want to make sure that they're healthy. We just have to be able to have that forum, that conversation for ongoing education.
You know, just as an aside, and Charlie, I'll get you in just a minute. Just as an aside, I was just thinking as you were talking about ice hockey players. Again, someone who's watched hockey for 50 years, players today like give their bodies up to block shots. Now, granted, the equipment is better, the padding is better, but it amazes me how a guy will stand in front of a 100-mile-per-hour slap shot. And and they don't think a thing about it.
And I see the aftermath of them doing that, and I tell you, I would never do that. But maybe that's why I'm a runner and not an ice hockey player. So.
That puck is just as hard.
Yeah, exactly. Charlie, what were we gonna say?
I have a quick one that accentuates Matt's point. Is like I went through a concussion recognition. I don't know if it was like a little seminar for coaches, the eyes, if they're dilating, the dizziness, ask the kids these questions. And it was about 8 years ago. I was in Virginia coaching a group of boys, and one of the kids, and I'll say his name because I'm very good friends with the family, and his name's Dylan Egger. He was 6'9", played for Mechanicsburg, and he went off. He's playing overseas, I think Canada right now. Well, we ran a big college showcase, and there was literally 100 college coaches sitting on the sideline. It was the big day for these kids to play in front of college coaches. And with him being 6'9", he was a focal point that day. A kid runs into him on a screen, and I just saw he just got woozy, and he walks off the court, and sits on the bench. And the head trainer at the facility of the college down there comes over, clears him. I didn't feel good about it. I just didn't feel good about putting him back in the game because I know the kid. I know my player. That trainer, that coach, or trainer at that school just walked over. They don't even know what this kid looks like when their mind is right or when they're – that's not the same kid looking me in the eye. And his dad comes over to me during the game and says, hey, the trainer said he's fine. Put him back in. I said, no, I can't. I said, you need to take him to the emergency room. I said, after you get cleared by the local hospital, I'll put him in the next game, because we were playing a few hours later. Dad comes back and says, hey, his name's Ken Egger, good buddy of mine. He goes, Charlie, thank you. He said, he has a concussion. He said, and they didn't diagnose it on site here, but the hospital did. He said, thank you for putting my son first. And I'm getting a little sentimental about it because I wanted that 6'9 kid in the game. My goodness, I wanted to win that game. And we probably lost by two that day because we didn't have him in there. But I just, that kid, based on the training I had, based on what Dr. Matt's saying here, and I know Dr. Mike could say the same thing, I didn't go in there uneducated coaching my team. That's why I was saying earlier, coaches need more guidance. They need more training to do this job.
We have a couple comments here. Mary in Lancaster says, I had two children who played D1. They were diversified in high school, and this was attractive to the recruiting process. We have another email along those same lines. Let me just get to it. Terry says, I have twin sons who graduated from Middletown Area High School in 2010. They were three-sport athletes, football, basketball, and baseball. They were excellent athletes who played at the highest levels for their schools. They led their teams to the playoffs, were high scorers, and great students. Their favorite sport was baseball. They hoped to play in college. When they started to be recruited by colleges, I remember having conversations with coaches about whether they should drop the other two sports and focus on baseball. Without exception, the coaches said no. They said they love multi-sport players. They are better athletes. They ended up with baseball scholarships to IUP and had very successful careers there. Also, my sons never suffered any injuries during high school or college careers. They were never burnt out playing any of their sports. They always looked forward to the next season and had great enthusiasm for every sport they played. That sounds like a testimonial to just what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's great. Put it on the air. That was really good.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, okay, we have Mike from Lititz who says, one of the speakers, Dr. Mike, I think this is you, mentioned being at Penn State and referring to sports as big business. That philosophy has flowed down to the youth leagues with travel teams, year-round participation, focus on one sport. And of course, kids will get hurt, but isn't medicine big business too? And tacitly participating in the growth of youth sports by not stating the obvious, are we growing bodies designed for impact of sports, practices, games?
Well, you know what? Medicine is big business too, but we try to help people by making them well. And when sports tries to work with people to keep them well, then we'll be kind of like on the same wavelength. It's difficult. I don't know how to say this without, you know, people today want their kids to be the best that they can be. We in medicine also want their kids to be the best they can be. The difference is how to get there. You know, we're saying there is a way to get there to lessen the number of injuries. Some of the people in sports are saying they want to get there no matter how they get there. So I guess the differentiation is we're health related, we're exercise oriented, but we are health related. We try to get the kid off the bench, but get him off the bench as quickly, but as safely as possible. That's the difference.
I'm going to make a quick comment for parents out there if they're wondering how to summarize this. And my experience in just dealing on the ground with parents all the time is, and this is the kind of advice I give people, is first off, let your kids go in the direction they feel their heart's best. You'll never regret that, because then they'll do it with all their heart 100%, whatever that is, two sports, three sports. But until they get to probably at least eighth grade and their body physically matures enough to, and sometimes it's not even eighth grade, but let their body physically mature enough before they put the foot on the gas with all the extra training and the, you know, that kind of thing. Because right now kids today are operating without the tools. Like I tell parents all the time, we're expecting these kids to make the same amount of shots, jump the same amount of height, use the same ball, the same rim, almost the same three-point line as LeBron James, but they don't look like LeBron James yet, you know? So let their body mature before. So many kids are doing this high-level stuff, which I think speaks to the injuries and the emotional insecurity and all that, and they're not ready for it. We're accelerating that process. So I would say until they get to eighth, ninth grade, I wouldn't even entertain a conversation with your kid about specializing. That's just my personal opinion.
I just want to say we're not immune to these conversations in our own homes. So my middle child, Ben, participates in Taekwondo. And one night this past year, as he's progressing towards his black belt, he made a comment. He just wanted to play at home with his toys.
There you go.
And it was very convicting to me. I write papers on this topic. I lecture on this topic. I'm passionate about this topic. And yet in my own home, my child had to teach me that I was overscheduling him in his sport.
which at that moment was Taekwondo, not a sport we're even talking about today. So I want people to understand that are listening to today's show that we're not immune to this in our own homes. This is a challenge culturally for all of us. We're all in this together. I think that's an important thing to mention. Mm.
Hey, great conversation, gentlemen. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Dr. Michael Cordes, UPMC Pinnacle, Chairman of the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee of PIAA, Dr. Matthew Silvis, Division Chief, Primary Care Sports Medicine, Penn State Health, and Coach Charlie Fortney, Program Director, Advanced Hoops, AEU basketball. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we're going to talk about, maybe it's a little philosophical. We'll talk about when ideas clash as to someone in the community wants something and someone else doesn't. That's coming up on tomorrow's show.